Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. We're about to have another one of our Maryland Film Festival conversations. An incredible lineup this weekend. One of those films that I just previewed is called Vito. We're about to talk to its producer, and an amazing film. Jeffrey Schwartz is going to join us, but listen to this take first, and then we'll come back.
Hello, if you've just joined us, I'm Vito Russo.
Good evening, I'm Vito Russo.
I'm Vito Russo.
I'm Vito Russo.
Vito was first and foremost an activist.
The gay people in middle America are certainly ready for it, and if the straight people aren't, then they should get to know who their neighbors are.
If you're going to talk about the gay rights movement, you're going to talk about Vito.
Gay rights right now! Gay rights!
When I got involved in the gay movement, I was fighting for the generations that are going to come after me, so that young gay people who are 14 and 15 won't have to grow up the way we did.
These people are debating whether or not you have the right to live, and you're not part of the discussion.
Vito got very angry, but he had this special gift of being able to be angry and you still loving him.
Just for a minute or so, we'd like to take you back exactly 60 years to what may be the first gay character in an American motion picture.
He was the first person to write about how Hollywood treated homosexuals.
I have loved you the way they said.
Now it's not such a shocking thing to see gay people on the screen. But you know, the things that you think are going to take 10 years take 100 years.
Where was the FDA?
40,000 dead from AIDS.
Vito had a big impact on how we thought about, handled, and dealt with the epidemic.
I'd like to get a lot of people in this community angry. The rest of this show may help you to get angry.
In the middle of the river, he went and he changed the current. You know how hard it is to do that?
It's real important that right now, whether I live or whether I die, that I fight.
He took a stand. He is our gay hero.
And that was just the head of the film. And we're here talking with Jeffrey Schwartz, producer and director of Vito and president and CEO of Automat Pictures. And Jeffrey, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Great to be here. Thank you.
And you're also the director.
Yes. I'm the producer and the director. We, you know, in documentaries, we have to wear a lot of hats. So
yes.
I also make coffee.
Is it good coffee?
It's delicious.
That's good. That's what good. Well, I'll have to come to one of your films as you're making them. But
there you go.
First of all, in seriousness, this film Vito, of the story of Vito Russo, I was blown away by it because I had never heard of Vito Russo before. And as a child of the 60s who was involved in the movement, involved in film and even gay rights back in the 60s and early 70s, I didn't know Vito. So it's an amazing story.
Well, Vito was one of those guys who came of age in the late 60s. You know, he was involved in a lot of the other protest movements that were going on around the time, like a lot of guys, gay and lesbian people of his generation. They were involved in the student movement, the anti-war movement, civil rights, you know, black civil rights movement, all these other movements, but not necessarily the gay and lesbian civil rights movement until around the time of Stonewall. So they were looking around and saying, well, you know, all these other movements are moving forward, and what about us? So that was sort of part of Vito's story.
So now the what he's famous for, I guess, in society, beyond the gay and lesbian rights world, is the book The Celluloid Closet that he wrote about this incredible stuff he discovered about gay and lesbian sex and love and scenes in Hollywood film.
That's right. Vito, growing up, he loved movies. He, you know, spent every spare moment he had going to the movies in New York. And he started to notice that the way gay and lesbian people were depicted in films either was in a stereotypical manner. A lot of times the gay characters might be the sort of comic relief, the sort of sissy characters, the character actors like Franklin Pangborn used to play and would always get, you know, like the flustered hotel clerk, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or they were portrayed as psychopathic villains, like in Hitchcock's Rope or Rebecca or the movie Cruising with Al Pacino later on. Or they were portrayed as suicidal, weak victims that would kill themselves at the end of the film. And he started to put two and two together and realized that the way Hollywood was depicting gay people was not always such a pretty picture. So he put his thoughts together in a famous book called The Celluloid Closet that was published in 1981. And that's sort of how he made a name for himself. He had been showing clips from a lot of these movies. He would travel around the country doing a lecture and a clip show, and he sort of made his name as the expert in this field. And then when the book came out, it kind of cemented his reputation. And later, he'd already been an activist. And later, when the AIDS epidemic began, he sort of channeled all of his anger and rage at what was going on into activism. So he was always an activist, and the writing that he did on film was a byproduct of his activism.
One of the scenes in the film, as you really struck me, about the celluloid closet, you know, like a book that I know, but I never associated, I never kept the name Vito Russo in my head. But at any rate, was the comments in the film about how those early depictions of gay people in movies affected the consciousness of America about who gay people are, but also affected the consciousness of young gay and lesbian people in America.
Well, that's very true. I mean, this is a very different time that we're talking about. I mean, now you click on any TV show, we'll have gay and lesbian people represented in a very fair way, not as sort of demonic outsiders or others. You know, a lot of the times when gay people were portrayed in films, it was almost like a horror movie. You know, they were portrayed as sort of demonic outsiders, sometimes literally. I mean, there's like a whole genre of vampire lesbian movies, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Vito realized that this is doing enormous psychic damage to gay people, that, prior to Stonewall, a lot of the gay representation in film was very dark and shadowy. And the message that Hollywood was sending was that gay lives really don't matter, or that if you're going to be gay, you're going to be depressed, suicidal, tormented. And, that didn't reflect the gay and lesbian community. So it was inevitable that was going to be internalized by gay and lesbian people, but also by the larger community was going to see these depictions and sort of assume that's the way all gay people were. So Vito was arguing that, Hollywood depicted gay and lesbian people in a way that was sort of more reflective of the reality of our lives.
And it was also, though, I mean, you make the point in the film, and he made the point in the film, that despite the attempt to ban gay and lesbian sensuality or depictions in film for almost 40 years, that early film made it almost feel like a natural part of existence, that it was there.
Well, in a lot of the early silent films, you do see depictions of homosexuality. You know, there was a thing called the Hays Code that came in the 1930s, and the production code. And the production code, movies were relatively free to explore a lot of different subjects, sexuality included. I mean, not in a graphic way, but, you know, you had to sort of still read between the lines, but those pre-code movies were pretty racy for the time. And once the production code came in, one of the things that they specifically outlawed was depictions of sex perversion, and everyone kind of knew what that meant. So a lot of the sissy characters that were depicted, they sort of disappeared, and same-sex references pretty much disappeared. But clever directors found ways to kind of communicate this between the lines. You know, if you watch Hitchcock's Rope, it's clear that that's a gay couple. There's no doubt about it. If you watch Hitchcock, found ways to communicate that in very clever, subtle ways, or Strangers on a Train, another film that Hitchcock made, even a movie like The Maltese Falcon. There's a Peter Lorre playing,
yes,
who in the book is specifically references being gay, and in the movie he comes in and he gives Bogart a business card, and it's scented with lavender, and everyone knows what that meant, you know. the gay people were always in the movies, and clever directors found ways around the production code to communicate this.
Now, take a step backwards in your kind of what attracted you to this film and to doing it. The Celluloid Closet was the book was turned into a documentary that you apparently worked on. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, like a lot of people, when I was coming out, I was a lover of movies. I went to film school, and reading The Celluloid Closet really it coincided with my coming out. And Vito had passed away by the time that I started reading the book. A couple of years after he passed away, I'd read an interview with the directors Rob Epstein and Jeffrey Friedman, and Rob made The Times of Harvey Milk, and Rob and Jeffrey together made another documentary called Common Threads, which Vito appeared in. They both won Oscars, so these are great directors and real heroes of mine. I'd read that they were going to be making a documentary adaptation out of Vito's book, And I jumped at the chance to try to work on it, and called them up and ended up moving to San Francisco to work on The Celluloid Closet. And Vito had, you know, passed away not too long before I arrived on the scene there. And his spirit was definitely guiding the making of that film. And I luckily, getting to work on that film, I had access to a lot of Vito's original research materials for when he was writing The Celluloid Closet, interviews with actors and directors and all of his research materials, and then also interviews with Vito that Rob and Jeffrey had conducted prior to making Common Threads and also The Celluloid Closet. So I got to know Vito through watching a lot of this material. And as the years went on, I sort of remembered that this material existed and started realizing that not a lot of people knew who Vito was. You know, as time goes on, he was a very prominent figure in the 70s and the 80s. I think if you ask any average gay or lesbian person at that time who Vito was, they would know. You know, he was a prominent author, lecturer, sort of gadfly. He was around town. Everyone knew him. But as time goes on, you know, these people recede into the distance. And I wanted to make sure that he would be remembered and sort of put back in his proper rightful place as one of the founding fathers of the movement. Because a lot of the things that he was talking about and fighting for, either we're still fighting for today, or a lot of the things that he predicted would happen have happened, you know, in terms of gay and lesbian representation on film and gay civil rights. You know, he was fighting the fight for the next generation and the generation after. He knew he wouldn't live long enough to see the end results of the work he did regarding gay and lesbian representation, or the work he did as a gay and lesbian civil rights activist and also an AIDS activist.
And you're of the you're the younger generation who came after him. And I'm curious.
Yeah,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's accurate. That's right.
So, and in the film, one of the things is he's also, there's a scene where he has AIDS and he can't go down to the march, but he's on the Larry Kramer's balcony, if I remember correctly. And,
yep.
And all these people in the bottom are cheering, Vito, Vito, Vito. And you talk about the power and influence that Vito Russo had on these young people's lives.
Vito came out on the balcony, and the ACT UP contingent, which was actually several blocks long, they came out and started yelling, Vito, 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 we love you, we love you, we love you.
Vito, Vito, Vito. And he was just thrilled beyond belief.
It was such a moving moment, you know, and Larry Kramer said to Vito, those are our children.
Well, that's right. I mean, you know, Vito was among the first wave of gay liberationists, as we used to call it, after Stonewall. And by the time the AIDS epidemics had started, this was a new generation of people who were affected directly by the disease, Vito included. So the ACT UP was the group that Vito helped to co-found. It was a guerrilla street activist group that was formed to combat the government indifference, the media indifference, the medical community indifference to the AIDS epidemic. But a lot of the kids that were coming into ACT UP were in their late teens and 20s. You know, they didn't necessarily have the background as activists, so they looked to Vito and the men of his generation to help to guide them in making effective protest and educating themselves about what they could do to change the situation.
What's also fascinating to me is the people you have, obviously, that you went to come to join you to be interviewed in this film. And two of those people are his brother, Charles Russo, and his cousin, Phyllis Antonellis.
That's right. Cousin Perky.
Right. And that is a huge piece of the story that I find so interesting. As a kid, Vito Russo growing up in this tough, working-class New York City neighborhood, and his story of who he was and how different he was and how the family responded to him.
Yeah, one of the things I find really fascinating and inspiring about Vito was that, you know, even though he grew up at a time where homosexuality was a dirty little secret, and he was being told by the culture at large that there was something very deeply wrong with him, he never believed it. He always thought that they were full of it. And he just had this special feeling that he knew there was nothing wrong with him. And he also had a family who supported him. You know, his brother Charlie, his parents, you know, they knew he was gay. I think at first it was probably a little bit difficult for them because they're, you know, a very different culture, different generation. But they learned to support Vito, and Vito was very upfront in bringing his gay friends home, making them aware of what he was doing politically, you know, in the early days. He was very out and proud when it was not, when that was a pretty avant-garde thing to do. But his parents loved and accepted him, and his family loved and accepted him regardless. That's what probably gave him a lot of his self-confidence, that he always knew that he would have his family to back him up.
And one of the things that I thought just socially so important about that part of your film, with his brother and cousin, especially his brother in some ways, well, both in different ways. His brother, because here's his brother, who's this Italian guy, you know, who you would in your knee-jerk reaction, in your, you meet him, he said, oh, he wouldn't be supporting gay people. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, in
our stereotypical way we do in America. But here he was standing up for his brother, or his cousin talking about how the relationship with his mother and how the father came around. I mean, that was a very powerful piece of the story. To me, almost as powerful and as important as the political end of the story of how he was the kind of founder and leader of gay rights in America, in New York.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of Vito's friends didn't have that that acceptance at home. You know, I think a lot of things, people say that the difference between gay people and other minorities is that, you know, if you're an African-American kid and you get made fun of or teased at school, you can come home and the rest of your family would understand because, you know, you're of the same minority. But gay kids growing up, they don't have that because when they go home, their parents aren't gay too, most of the time, and they don't necessarily understand what they're going through, you know. Vito was very self-reliant. He also, very early on, made other gay friends. Even when he was in high school, he sort of found a gay clique that we talked about in the film. He hung out with drag queens. He hung out with sort of the people that were sort of on the outside, which also empowered him. You know, he found community at Fire Island. You know, I think community is something that really empowered Vito, too. I mean, he was somebody who helped to create community through his film screenings. He created an environment where gay people could come together to see, to watch films together. That had never really happened before. And he realized we all sort of have a common language. I mean, if you've ever seen a movie with a gay audience, it's a very different experience. If you go watch The Wizard of Oz with a gay and lesbian audience versus, you know, the kitty matinee, it's a very, very different experience.
there are pieces here clearly with Larry Kramer and Lily Tomlin that add another piece of substance to this film, and his relationship with people like Lily Tomlin and Beth Midler as he was in the heart of building this movement.
Yeah, I mean, he was somebody who was able to have deep, close relationships with people in all different segments of society. You know, he was a New Yorker, and he was able to move to these different worlds, the gay world, the society world, the Hollywood world, and he made friends with Lily Tomlin pretty early on. I mean, she was already sort of famous. She, you know, won an Oscar for Nashville. She was on Laugh-In. And she and Vito were very, very close. And Vito interviewed her for The Advocate, which is a very bold thing for a celebrity to do at that time. You know, she wasn't yet out.
Right.
But if you read between the lines of The Advocate interview or even some of the comedy albums that she did, the evidence was always there, you know. But she was playing it by sort of letting people who were very sharp and could pick up on these hints that she was dropping. Like in the Advocate interview, she said something like, I wouldn't do an interview with a gay magazine if I wasn't, you know, a lesbian. She didn't say the words, but Vito respected her privacy and would never sort of out her. But he understood the position she was in, and they respected each other and adored each other.
He never really tried to motivate me to come out in a big way, but I knew he would have liked it. Of course, I would have been very nervous about it anyway, career-wise, but not that I'd ever been felt that I was really personally closeted, but, you know, I had a big, huge American audience from television, and I'm sure many people just thought I was a nice girl from Detroit. In fact, in 75, Time magazine offered me the cover of Time if I would come out. When they offered it to me, I called Vito, and I said, you know, it feels like I was being bought. They wanted somebody. They didn't, and they were just out fishing around to get somebody. That's why I wasn't afraid to do the Advocate interview with him, because I felt his humanity was so kind of evolved that it wasn't like he was out to make points.
The another piece of this I think is important for people to watch is also the towards the end of the film where he is fighting around AIDS and HIV and the epidemic that hit the gay community and hit America, hit the world. And because what you portray there is also not just his leadership, which is very powerful, but is the power that the gay movement had in changing a political situation. That's going to be is kind of important for people to see, especially what in light of what the world is facing now.
Well, you know, I don't think a lot of younger people who didn't grow up in the time when an AIDS diagnosis was basically a death sentence, you know, that before the drugs came along that could prolong people's lives. You know, kids coming up today, they think the AIDS is over. They don't see the evidence of it, you know, but Vito's entire world crumbled beneath his feet, essentially. You know, all of his friends and loved ones were dealing with this, either directly or indirectly. And Vito himself, you know, his partner Jeffrey became ill, and Vito also around the same time found out he had AIDS, and they were taking care of each other. Vito's partner Jeffrey did die from AIDS, and you know, Vito was somebody who was able to channel all of his grief and rage and anger into a positive response, and channeled all that into action. And that's a great lesson, I think, for activists today. You know, I mean, we can pick up the newspaper and be angry about, you know, a litany of problems in our country and in our world, but unless we get out and do something about it, we really have no right to complain. That was Vito's message from the very, very beginning. You know, get out there and do something about it.
It made me think this is a related but not unrelated completely. I watched your film before we had our interview and read some more. And then the other day I watched this film, Mountaintop Removal, and interviewed the filmmakers there. And what was interesting to me is that what both of your films depicted was the power that people have to make change, to come together and push for change and stand up for social justice. That's what both these films said to me in as part that I think is important for people to watch outside the whole issue of the development of gay rights and this incredible human being of Vito Russo.
Oh, I agree with you. That's a great film, too, the one you're talking about, and that's another example. You know, it really does show one person can make a difference, and I hope the message people take away from Vito is, you know, it's a gay and lesbian issue. It's a question of trying to make the world a better place, and what are you going to do to make the world a better place, and that an individual can make a difference. Vito always knew that. So whether your issue of concern is gay and lesbian civil rights or economic injustice or the environment or any number of things. I mean, look what's going on with Occupy. You know, I think Occupy is taking a lot of their cues from ACT UP. And we should be so lucky if Occupy has the sort of same end result as ACT UP. I mean, ACT UP changed history. I'm curious to see what will happen with Occupy. You know, ACT UP, they educated themselves about every aspect of the disease, down to the science too. I mean, they could sit, they could scream and yell in the streets and stop traffic and throw blood and do some very dramatic things, but they could also sit down with scientists and pharmaceutical companies and politicians and have those conversations. Vito knew everything about what was going on with the disease. He educated himself. And he was also, you know, this was the time when patients weren't necessarily empowered to be involved in their treatment. You know, maybe prior to AIDS, it was just sort of listen to what your doctor says. You know, but the doctor's not always right. And the doctor's sometimes actually wrong. And sometimes the advice the doctor is going to give you is going to be detrimental to your health. That's what they realized. So they educated themselves to the extent that they actually were able to change the situation. You know, when a drug was priced too high, they protested on Wall Street and unfurled a banner in the stock exchange that told people to sell their stock in this company, Burroughs Wellcome. And the stock went down. And of course, they immediately lowered the price of the drug. You know, so they had a direct effect on their situation. I hope Occupy can have some of the same effect. It remains to be seen.
So one of the things that, before I come back directly to Vito Russo, I just want to throw this in here, that Miriam Cutler, who wrote the score.
Yes.
To me, a big part of what drove this movie, besides your work in it as a filmmaker and Vito Russo's incredible story, was her score. This is an amazing piece of music she pushed and worked.
Oh, thank you.
Go ahead.
Thanks for bringing her up. Thanks for bringing her up, because I adore Miriam. This is the first time that we've worked together, but I knew her work from seeing other documentaries, in particular a documentary I really love called Chris and Dom. And it's a story of Christopher Isherwood and Dom Bacardi. And she wrote the score for that. And I just thought that's just one of my favorite documentaries and one of my favorite scores for a documentary. And I just called her up, and she kind of, she specializes in scoring documentaries. Mm. And she actually has been doing this for quite a while, but she was also in rock and roll. She was played with Oingo Boingo for a while, you know. And she has another film that's actually playing in Maryland Festival called Ethel, which is about Ethel Kennedy. And she was working on Vito and Ethel around the same time, so she didn't get a lot of sleep this past summer.
She was amazing. Her work's amazing. Then, I mean, both your films,
yeah,
all those films.
Good. I'm glad you think so. I think she's a terrific composer. I just saw her last night, and I will tell her that you said so.
Please do. Again, this film to me, and describe this about in your own words, is a film about this man who came of age and became an activist and helped build the gay rights movement, really a very powerful force in it. But you also did this as a very loving film. This is it just feels loving, the way you made it.
Well, you know, I hope so. I'm glad that came across. You know, it's Vito's story, and it's also a story of the gay, lesbian, civil rights movement from before Stonewall through ACT UP. And I thought it was a very good way to communicate this history to a new generation who doesn't necessarily know the story, but in an emotional way. I mean, I think it's all, it's making documentaries, it's just all about telling a story that you can become emotionally engaged with. And the device of telling the story through Vito's point of view, it prevents it from just being a history lesson, you know, that
right.
You really feel the immediacy, that you really feel that you're there sort of behind the barricades with Vito every step of the way, hopefully.
And he was one of those at the barricades. That's the thing. He was a fearless in his fight for human rights.
Incredibly brave. And, you know, it was all about visibility. It was all about, during the early days of the gay liberation movement, it was just about being out, just about coming out of the closet. That was the first step. It's just making the world see who we are, you know, that we're not these stereotypes that you see in movies or to be talked about in sort of hushed terms. So we're, you know, that old, now it's an old expression, we're here, we're queer, get used to it. You know, it was sort of the mantra of the gay liberation movement in the early days. And then Vito's work through the cellular closet is just sort of making gay life visible on the screen. In particular, with he encouraged independent filmmaking, you know, that we shouldn't look to Hollywood necessarily to tell our stories. We should tell our own stories. And then in the AIDS epidemic, is coming out as a person with AIDS, which was a very brave thing to do at that time, too, because there was so much discrimination and fear about people with AIDS. You know, so he knew how to work the media, and he put himself out there as almost like a poster boy, you know, for a person who has AIDS, because he was articulate, he was brave, he was smart, he was charming, he was funny. And he, you know, channeled that anger and also was able to communicate what the problem was in all of these areas for his entire life as an activist.
Well, this is Jeffrey Schwartz. I'm glad you did this film. I'm glad you're bringing it to Baltimore. I'm glad the Maryland Film Festival is going to show it here. And I want to encourage everybody to do their best to come to the festival. But to see this film, you can, by the way, just go to md-filmfest.com. And find information about tickets and the films that are going to be there. And that information will also be on our website, steinershow.org. We've been talking with Jeffrey Schwartz, the producer and director of Vito, an incredible film. This film will be shown Friday at the Charles at 1:30 and again on Saturday at 2:30 at the Charles. And so it's a film not to be missed. And Jeffrey Schwartz, thank you so much, and look forward to meeting you when you're in town.
I look forward to meeting you, too. I can't wait to come to Baltimore. I've been there several times. Last time I was there to do interviews for a new film, which is called I Am Divine, about one of Baltimore's favorite sons. And so it's a very different kind of movie, but also somebody who sort of, you know, was himself and would not be ignored.
Divine was a trip. So
yes, he was.
Yes, he was. Jeffrey Schwartz, thanks so much, man. We'll look forward to meeting you in Baltimore. Thanks for the film.
All right. My pleasure.
Take care. Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Christina Arison. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear additional interviews, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM. the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.